out individual trees, each sheathed in iron, standing like sentinels under the brightness of a spring sun. Silver flowers sprouted from their branches, nestled amongst reflective iron leaves. Gareth lost his breath. He swore it was the most beautiful sight he'd ever seen. It was a sight worth fighting for, even if it meant helping those he'd once called his enemies. The Legion's return to Ironwood was not without fanfare. Orians and humans alike lined the broad avenue through the forest, though the former stood on thick branches that overhung the thoroughfare, while the latter edged the sides of the path. Children ran and laughed, while the adults raised fists in the air, welcoming their brave soldiers. Gareth knew what it meant. They don't know what is coming. This was good, he supposed, for it should be he who told them, especially as he planned to invite their enemies across their borders for the first time in recent history. It would be a bitter pill to swallow, and he wanted them to understand the reason. He bowed and raised his own fists, and even stood in the stirrups and trumpeted a cry of victory. For they had defeated a great enemy while in Fanes, even if it was only a portion of the Phoenicians. And if a Southron alliance could be forged. Gareth bit his tongue and refused to cling to that word, hope, like it could save them. For it couldn't. No, he would rely on the strength of his people, a people who had never been defeated within their iron stronghold, not even during the dragon massacre. So he rode on, enjoying his part in the panoply, for it was the last celebration his people might have for a long time, maybe ever.
"Your Highness, I beg you to reconsider."
Gareth sat the Iron Throne with an audience of only his generals, three men and two women. Three were Orians and two were humans, legionnaires he'd known his entire life as they worked their way up through the ranks. Gareth sighed. He'd known persuading his generals to the course of action he'd chosen wouldn't be easy, but he hadn't thought it would be this difficult. Then again, he didn't need to persuade anyone of anything, for he was the king. "Yes, I do," he reminded himself. He didn't want to rule as a tyrant. No, the Four Kingdoms had been ruled by tyrants for far too long, which meant convincing first his generals and then the rest of his people to welcome the Northerners into the East. Making the impossible possible, he thought, a new mantra of his that he quite liked. None believed an alliance with Rhea Loren had been possible, until it had. "I value your advice, General Jormundur," Gareth said. The tall, strong Orion nodded once, causing his lush green hair to ripple like disturbed seawater.
"I advise you to keep the northern border closed," he said.
"And I request you to keep an open mind."
"I'm trying, Your Highness," the general said tiredly, his eyes looking more bronze than their typical gold.
The other generals looked just as weary, and Gareth didn't blame them. They'd had a long march, a bloody battle, and then another long march. They were all exhausted, both mentally and physically. Hell, he was too.
"You saw the evil we face. Can we all agree on that?"
Slowly, the generals nodded one by one. Though Gareth was certain they wanted to disbelieve the images Lisbeth Lorne had projected into their minds, he knew they couldn't deny the truth any more than he could.
"And you agree we are outnumbered by our foes, do you not?"
Again, there were nods of agreement, though their stony expressions told a different story.
"So we need allies, correct?"
The nods stopped.
"Ironwood is our ally," General Jormundur said. "Its defences have proved themselves time and time again, and now they are stronger than ever. Even the dragons couldn't breach them."
It was a fair point, but the enemy they now faced was an unknown, the likes of which they'd never experienced. They couldn't know what to expect, nor could they be certain the Horde would attempt a direct assault on the Iron Forest.
"So you would have me sit safe in Faerir while our neighbours to the north are slaughtered?"
He was annoyed that he'd let his frustration creep into his tone, but he couldn't help it. How did one change an isolationist mindset that crossed several generations?
"Neighbours? Your father referred to the north by a different name," the general reminded him.
"Aye, our enemy.
I know that, Gareth said evenly. But that didn't work out very well for him, did it? Nor for my brothers. I am not any of them. I am the sword, and I will take a different path, with or without your support.
There was a challenge in his tone, one that was intentional. Their argument had come to a head, and it was time to make a decision. The generals exchanged a series of glances, seeming to come to an unspoken decision of their own. General Jormundur spoke for all of them.
Long have we served the ironclads, and we will still. Though we disagree with your position on the north, we will help you. We will help them.
Gareth felt his body relax until the general added,
But be warned, there will be strife between our peoples. The inhabitants of the Iron Forest do not react well to outsiders.
I can deal with that later, Gareth thought, satisfied with the conclusion.
Thank you, he said as he stood. There was not a moment to lose. He needed to finally send a stream to Darin.
26. The Northern Kingdom, Darin. Anis Gerick. Anis's eyes flashed open, seeing nothing but darkness, until her gaze settled on an aurora of green and red-hued moonlight ghosting through the window. Her heart was beating too fast, and she felt something wet on her cheeks.
I'm crying, she realized, blinking away tears.
A dream, nothing more.
She sighed, frustrated. She loved Taryn. Of that there was no doubt in her mind. But that didn't make it any less difficult, knowing that the times when she needed him most, and consequently when he needed her most, were the times when they had to be apart. She knew it was worth it, but still.
Something shifted behind her, and she almost cried out when an enormous hand closed around her. She stifled the cry, realizing it was Taryn.
"Frozen hell," she said. "You nearly stopped my heart."
He murmured something in his sleep, for he was not truly awake. Anis almost laughed, but didn't want to wake him. She was pleasantly surprised. Typically, after a period of extreme violence, Taryn required longer to get his head right again. Perhaps he was learning to control the monster. Laughter resounded in her head.
"Control me? Impossible." "Go away," Anis thought back.
Ever since Terran's monster had found a way to communicate with her, she'd gained a greater appreciation for what her paramour was forced to endure on a daily basis. But that didn't mean she wanted to talk to it while she was supposed to be sleeping.
"I could, or—"
Anis sighed again.
"Or what?" "Or I could tell you what Taryn tried to do to me." Damn it. This wasn't what Anis wanted.
Taryn was supposed to talk to her, communicate. The last thing she wanted was to violate his own thoughts by communicating with the very part of him he detested most. But now the curiosity was killing her.
"Yes or no? Your choice."
Anis closed her eyes, trying to picture what the thing inside Taryn might look like if it had a body of its own. The monster filled in her thoughts for her.
"Black skin, scales, claws like daggers, fangs as long as—"
"Stop," Anis said.
"Yes or no?"
the monster repeated.
"Yes,"
Anis thought, hating herself for her weakness.
"He took your suggestion,"
the monster said.
"He tried to kill me."
Anise's body jolted upright.
"What?"
she asked. But the monster was already gone, leaving her with that little nugget to wrap her own dark thoughts around. She remembered when the warning bells had begun tolling in Gearhead. She'd run into Taryn, and his leg had been bleeding profusely. She'd wanted to ask about it, but everything had happened so fast.
Frozen hell! He tried to use pain to drive the monster away.
She turned to look at the sleeping giant, only to find he was no longer sleeping, his dark eyes watching her.
"I'm sorry I didn't tell you," he said. "I was waiting for the right time, and then, well,
everything.
Terin, I...
She wanted to ask why he hadn't gone through with it. Who had helped him? She knew the answer. Fay. And felt a slash of jealousy cut through her. Not because she worried about any romantic connection between Terin and the blacksmith, but because she wanted it to be her Terin had asked to help him. And why had he stopped? Had he been interrupted by the bells? Terin stared at her, waiting for her to finish her thought. And reading her mind, she was sure of it. She shook her head.
"I didn't want you to see me like that," Terin said. "Aye, reading my mind just like I thought."
"I know."
"And I chose to stop."
"Why?"
"Because I was afraid I couldn't protect you without it."
"What?"
Terin frowned just as a splash of moon's light found its way to his face, illuminating his strangely perfect features.
"Without this thing inside me, I wouldn't be anything special. I would just be Terin, and I don't know if I would still be strong enough to..."
"Terin, you're the size of an ice bear. I think you could protect me just fine on your own."
"You don't know that," he said,
and the earnestness in his tone made her heart melt into a puddle.
"With the monster gone, I might shrivel up like a piece of old fruit, or turn back into the skinny rail of a boy you once knew."
"Terin,"
Anise said again, her voice growing husky,
"you will always be more of a man than any other."
She rolled over and took him in her arms. She didn't want to waste another second on this night, when he wasn't even supposed to be in her bed, and yet, magically, he was. Her lips found his, as she shoved him back onto his pillow and threw her leg to the opposite side of the bed, straddling him. She didn't need to tell him what to do, his hands roving from her hips to her breasts, teasingly plucking at the ties at the front of her nightclothes. She gave herself to him, and him to her, their bodies illuminated by flashes of moon's light in the dark. Anise chose not to continue their conversation in the morning, allowing Terin to help her with her armour, his fingers burning tracks on her each time they lingered a moment longer than necessary, as he tightened a leather strap around her body.
"Thank you," she said when he had finished.
She was slightly breathless.
"You're welcome."
He cupped her chin in his hands and kissed her, and she had the urge to remove all the armour so they could do it all over again.
"In another world, perhaps,"
she thought, rolling her tongue over the gap in her teeth.
"How do I look?"
she asked, opening her mouth wide.
"I wouldn't mess with you," Terin said.
"Good. Perhaps I can scare the barbarians off with my smile."
"I love it when you talk battle."
Anise ignored him, else she'd be distracted.
"We should see Fay. I'm certain she can pull together some scraps of metal until she can construct you a full set of plates."
"I'll be fine," Terin said with a grimace.
It was a stark reminder of what had happened only a day earlier. Though she'd been fighting the barbarians too, her gaze kept finding him. Without armour, splattered with blood and gore, he had fought like a tornado brought to life. The sheer violence she'd witnessed from him had dwarfed anything she'd ever seen in her life.
"Thank the frozen gods he'd been fighting on our side."
"Anise,
you have nothing to be sorry for. You did what you had to do to protect our people, to protect me."
His expression remained tight for a moment longer, and then relaxed. He nodded. She wanted more than anything to take him into her arms again, to comfort him, but there wasn't time for that. Not yet. He was still looking at her, and she could sense he had something else to tell her.
"What is it?"
she asked.
"The hoard was smaller than expected,"
Terin said slowly, evenly. Anise closed her eyes. She had thought the same thing, but was still trying to wrap her head around it. Also, her uncle Helmuth and his ewe-strapped legs had been absent from the battle.
"I know," she said, "which means a larger force is coming. The ones we fought must have been a faster advance party, sent to harry us, weaken us."
Terin licked his lips.
Perhaps you're right. But I would suggest otherwise.
Anis frowned. What do you mean?
We weren't exactly swift in our flight,
Terin said.
There's no reason the entire horde couldn't have caught us.
Anise's pulse quickened, though she wasn't certain why.
You're saying they purposely split up? Then where is my uncle? Where is the rest of the horde?
I'm not sure,
Terin said, shaking his head.
But it's likely they're already through Raider's Pass. Gearhead is only a short distance from the mountains.
She considered his theory. Anything was a possibility, but something about it didn't make sense.
My uncle swore vengeance on the north. He had us on the run. Why would he divert his course?
Terin said,
I don't know, but I know someone who might provide you with greater insight.
Anise knew exactly who he meant, the only living person who might truly understand the way her uncle's mind worked.
Come on, she said. Let's go find Zelda.
They exited the room, turning right down a short stone corridor, and then swung left, shoving through a heavy oak door that led without the barracks. The bright sunlight stunned Anise for a second, and she squinted, letting her eyes adjust.
Too cheery a day by half,
Terin grunted, cupping a huge hand over his eyes like a visor. Anise couldn't disagree, and yet feeling the warm sunlight on her face felt good. Like it was a different day. Like there was still hope.
And there is, she realized. For us. For my people.
Two people she'd thought were dead were alive. Yes, they'd lost many lives, too many, yesterday. But not all. Plus, if they only faced a small portion of the horde, perhaps there was still a chance, or at least half of one. And as long as the heart of the north continued to beat...
We will fight, she whispered.
What?
Terin asked, raising an eyebrow.
Nothing. I want to see my aunt.
Breakfast, then,
Terin said, smiling at his own joke. Of course, it wasn't really a joke, because as soon as they arrived at the makeshift mess tent, Anise spotted her broad-shouldered Aunt Zelda. She was double-fisting an apple and a sourdough roll smeared with butter.
Are you going to use your rations?
Zelda asked without preamble.
Sir Metz is a strict bugger.
Yes,
Terin answered for the both of them.
Pity,
Zelda said, crunching into her apple.
I shall wither away and die.
As dramatic as the day is long,
Anise said. She wanted to go to her aunt, to throw herself into her arms, to squeeze her until she could feel her heartbeat. But she restrained herself, for her aunt wasn't really the hugging, tear-filled reunion type.
I'm glad you're alive.
Me too, Zelda said. Even if it's only so I can starve to death under the rule of a merciless mess officer.
On cue, Sir Metz strode up in that too stiff manner of his, bowing to Anise from the waist. His polished armour shone almost as brightly as the sun.
Your Highness, I trust you slept well, he asked. Before she could answer, he continued, The watch have nothing to report from last night. However, this morning they've spotted several of the enemy milling about on the edge of the mountains. They seem to be hunting.
Hunting?
For food, he clarified.
What sort of food?
Anise pictured the barbarians leaping upon an unsuspecting woodsman, their teeth flashing as they began to gnaw on his limbs.
Deer? Rabbits? Anything they can find?
Oh.
Her dark thoughts vanished. Sometimes she forgot that the barbarians still required standard sustenance, just like anyone else. Even in the springtime, the north was a difficult place to survive, which meant...
They'll come for us soon.
Sir Metz's expression didn't change.
It is likely, Your Highness. I've taken the liberty of recommissioning those from your army who survived the battle without serious injury. Regular perimeter patrols have commenced. Their weapons have been sharpened, their armour polished, their—
Did you sleep, sir?
Anise asked, cutting him off. She noticed the redness in his eyes and the shadows darkening his cheeks.
I am fine. If the enemy attacks today—
We will rouse you forthwith,
Anise interrupted.
Sir Metz opened his mouth to argue, but she was too quick.
"You have done well, Commander Metz. Now go to bed. That is an order from your queen."
With another stiff bow, the knight turned and departed swiftly. Anise realized her error, shouting,
"And go to sleep!"
Sir Metz stopped, but didn't turn back. "Yes, Your Highness," he said. Lady Zelda chuckled.
"Nice save."
Anise could just picture the Honourable Knight going to bed as she'd commanded, but not sleeping, instead passing the time polishing and repolishing his armour.
"Has anyone seen a brutish lug masquerading as a knight?"
a voice asked. Anise turned to find Fay standing with a hand on her hip. Instead of the jealousy that had burned through her last night, she felt nothing but appreciation for this strong woman who had been there for Taryn during a dark time.
"He was here a minute ago," Anise said. "Nope, he must have fled back to the hinterlands."
"Amusing," Taryn said. "I shall eat breakfast to refill my shrunken ego."
Anise ignored him and went to Fay, clasping her arm.
"You are well."
Fay met Anise's eyes without flinching.
"Not a fang nor claw shall pierce our dear lug's skin," she said.
"Good. Thank you. Now let's eat."
Zelda said,
"I'm off to steal someone's food."
As she turned away, Anise said,
"Auntie."
A half turn back.
"Hmm?"
"Meet me on the wall, facing south. Half an hour."
"As you wish, dear."
With that, she departed, kicking her apple core in a perfect arc into a bucket full to brimming with the same. Anise had the urge to chase after her, to question her about her uncle, but she knew a queen needed to eat just like anyone else. Every soldier in the queue offered to let them skip the line, but Anise wasn't having it.
"My stomach will ache no more than any of yours," she said.
Eventually they reached the front, and were each given a small bowl of thin soup, a buttered sourdough roll, and an apple. It was meagre fare, but satisfying enough, and Anise relished every bite.
"Mind if I join you?"
someone said, just as Anise was mopping up the last of the soup with her roll. A familiar soldier woman stood before them, holding her own food.
"Of course," Anise said. "Taryn's cousin is always welcome."
Anise admired Mona Shiri as she sat. She was a dark-haired beauty with stunning features. She was also a courageous woman, one of the first to answer the call for female volunteers into the Queen's army. Sir Metz, despite his eccentricities, was smitten by her. To the surprise of almost everyone who knew them, she was smitten by the strange but dashing knight, too.
"Mona," Taryn said,
when she'd settled in beside them.
"Taryn,"
she said, mimicking his tone. And Anise was ever impressed by the young woman's ability to handle those who should probably intimidate her.
"You rode into battle yesterday."
Anise was somewhat surprised Taryn had noticed his cousin in his bloodlust. Even she hadn't seen Mona astride her horse. The line between him and the monster was as thin as a razor blade at times.
"I did. On Commander Metz's command."
Taryn muttered a curse under his breath.
"I am not a statue to be placed on a shelf," she fired back.
"I didn't say that."
"Cousin, I appreciate your concern for my safety, but like your queen,"
she raised her eyebrows in Anise's direction,
"I can handle myself."
Taryn's pale skin grew paler.
"I'm sorry. I didn't mean to imply—"
He took a deep breath, seemed to regather his thoughts, and then said,
"I know. I know all about the strength of women of the North. But I am a sworn knight and your cousin. It is in my nature to protect those I—"
"Those you what?"
There was a twinkle in Mona's eyes now, and Anise loved her for it.
"Those who need my help,"
Taryn said, flashing a smile of his own.
"You bastard," Mona said,
swatting at him playfully.
"Those I love," Taryn said, catching her hand.
Mona's eyes closed, opened.
"It's been a long time since I had family," she said.
The emotion was thick in her tone, and Anise suddenly felt like she and Fay were intruding on something personal.
"Me too,"
Taryn said.
"Thank you for joining us," Anise said, standing.
Fay seemed to get the hint too, rising lithely to her feet. "But I'm off to find Zelda."
"Do you need me to come?"
Terran asked. "No, thank you, sir. I will convene a council before noon. I will see you both there." Terran nodded, an unspoken thank you in his eyes. Anise deposited her apple core in a barrel already full of them, and marched for the smithy, cocking her head toward Fay. Not one to split hairs, she said, "You were with Terran when he..." Fay's eyes darted toward her, then away. "Yes, I wanted to tell you, but he swore me to..." Anise stopped and grabbed her, pulling her into an embrace and stealing her words.
"Thank you,"
she whispered into her ear,
"for being there for him."
"Aye, of course. He's my friend." With that said, Anise released her and continued on her way. Fay scrambled to catch up. "What is the status of the forges?" Anise asked. "Sir Metz has done as well as can be expected, though there were few experienced smithies when we arrived. But the forges are hot and have been turning out plate and weapon for the last several weeks. They have a decent stockpile." "Anything large?" Anise asked pointedly. "Not large enough," Fay said. "But I ordered several oversized pieces to be forged immediately. At the least, we can protect Terran's vital organs."
"At least,"
Anise thought.
"Excellent. Keep me posted."
"I will," Fay said, as Anise turned left, away from the forge. Though she trusted Semetz's report on the Watch's activities, she wanted to see for herself in case anything had changed in the last half hour, and she needed to meet her aunt. As she headed for one of the stone staircases leading to the top of the city wall, she passed soldiers, each of whom saluted her. She felt a swell of pride in her chest. These were her people, and they respected her as much as she respected them. On both accounts, it had been earned. She reached the staircase and started up it, watching as a lone bird wheeled overhead.
"A hawk," she thought, "hunting for field mice."
Metz's words came back to her.
"They seem to be hunting."
She reached the top, turning left and right, to find soldiers lining the wall. Their gazes were trained southward and slightly to the west. Every so often one would raise a spyglass to get a closer look. Anise followed their stares, her breath immediately stolen by the snow-capped mountains she'd first seen when she'd travelled with Terran to Raiders Pass. It seemed so long ago. Movement caught her eye, and she squinted to clarify it. The forms were fuzzy, but she'd recognize their strange, loping strides anywhere.
The Horde. "They carry a certain beauty, do they not?"
a voice said, startling her.
"Zelda, you've scared the cold out of me,"
Anise said, taking in her aunt's rumpled disposition. There were crumbs on her armor, her short, dark hair askew. Sir Metz would lose his mind if he saw her condition.
"So you noticed my brother's absence," Zelda said.
Anise nodded.
"Terran did too.
It's only a matter of time before others do as well. Word will spread. I need to know what to tell my people, my soldiers. Is the rest of the Horde still coming? Is Helmuth coming for us?" A grave expression found its way onto Zelda's face, and Anise feared the worst. But then she shook her head.
"No, dear. Helmuth is not coming. And I'll tell you why."
27. The Northern Kingdom, Darin. Terran Shiri. Terran wondered what Anise had learned from her aunt. After he'd left his cousin, Mona, to his surprise, had given him a warm hug around the waist, Terran had watched Anise and Zelda converse atop the wall, silhouetted in the morning light. Lady Zelda had done most of the talking, while Anise stared solemnly to the south. And then they'd clambered down the steps. Zelda had kept going, heading east for the castle in the heart of the city, while Anise had stopped, her eyes scanning the barracks, the mess area, the... They'd locked on his gaze, and something had shone in them. A light of sorts, one he couldn't read because of the conflicting emotions he sensed in it. Hope, perhaps? But an enduring sadness, too, one he feared even he could not kiss away.
She'd gestured to him, pointing in the direction of the castle and sticking a finger in the air. "Meet me in an hour." Then she'd nodded toward the forge. "And get Fay." In another time, he would have smiled at how easily they could communicate without uttering a single word. But his lips had been halted by her shimmering eyes, even as she'd turned away. Now he walked through the streets with Fay, who'd grudgingly left her post at the forge. When he'd found her, she was sweat-sheened and grimy, beating the frozen hell out of an enormous sheet of metal.
"Work on someone else's armor," he said,
his nose pricking as a familiar smell wafted through his nostrils. He frowned, trying to place the scent.
"Sorry," she said, without looking at him. "I'm on strict orders from the Queen."
"Of course you are,"
Taryn thought, and yet he felt an unexpected swell of happiness in his chest. Having someone who cared about him was something he was still getting used to, and he didn't just mean Anise.
"Thank you," he said.
"What was that? I couldn't hear you."
"Ha, ha. It'll have to suffice, because I won't say it again. Also, you won't have time to construct a full suit. We can't stay in Darin."
"I know," she said,
heavy disappointment in her tone. He chuckled at the pleasure she seemed to get from designing and forging new armor for him.
"But where will we go? We've run out of cities to flee to."
"In the north,"
Taryn grunted. His eyes were trained on the city square. Once, when he'd been a soldier stationed in this very city, the square would have been bustling with activity, merchants hawking their wares, soldiers patrolling, children playing. Even in times of war, this place had held a certain gladness. Now, however, it was a graveyard. Taryn wanted to look away, but could not. The bodies were lined up on the ground, each covered with a thin blanket. There were so many there was hardly space for the death workers to move.
"An army of the dead," Taryn thought.
In the very center sat an enormous cast-iron oven, flames dancing from its maw.
"A crematorium,"
Taryn knew. During the warmer months, when the ground was relatively soft, most northerners favored the burying of their dead. But in the winter, when a shovel could no longer pierce the frozen ground, Taryn realized why the smell he'd noticed earlier had been so familiar to him. While stationed in Darin, it had hung in the air constantly, like an invisible fog. Burning bodies. One of the cremators used a shovel to empty the ash from the oven, dumping load after load into a wheelbarrow, which another worker carted away, trailing grey smoke. Other workers hauled bodies to the oven, shoving them inside, the flames flaring up as they devoured each new corpse. Taryn looked away to find Faye's eyes on his.
"You and Anise are so much alike, it scares me," she said.
"Aye. We're both warriors. Only she's a queen of the north, and I'm a monster from the hinterlands."
"You said it, not me,"
Faye said with a wry smile.
"But that's not what I meant. You think you can save them all, but you can't. You aren't responsible for the burdens of the world."
When Taryn tried to object, she quickly added,
"Nor are you responsible for all the burdens of the north, or even this city."
"Then why should we try?"
Taryn said, surprised by the hopelessness in his own voice.
"Because you can," Faye said, "which is the same reason I will keep making you oversized plate, fit for an ice bear. Because I can."
Anise sat on the steps, rather than the plush seat usually reserved for the lord of the castle. Taryn caught her gaze, and they both managed a small smile. Fay's answer to his question continued to echo in his ears.
"Because you can."
"Aye, there is plenty of truth to that."
In many ways, that very statement had been his unspoken mantra for many years.
"Not without me you can't,"
the monster said. It had been silent for a long while, and despite its taunt, Taryn felt a strange relief at hearing it speak again.
"I know that now," Taryn said. "And thank you."
The prior night, his mind had been in disarray, clouded with darkness. He knew Anise was hurting, that she needed him and he needed her, and yet he refused to go to her when he was like that, still coming down from his bloodlust. But then the monster had said go, and vanished, drawing its shadowy veil with it. At first, the shock of its sudden disappearance had been like being struck by a bout of exhaustion, and he'd collapsed, trying to regain his breath. After a few moments, however, the feeling had passed, and he was just Terin again. He'd gone to Anise, who was already fast asleep, curling up beside her, feeling her warmth melt into him until he'd drifted away too. Now he knew it had been a gift, and not a small one.
"Thank you," he repeated. "Don't say that again," the monster said. "We are the same. What you need, I need, and vice versa."
That thought brought Terin back to reality, and he refocused on Anise, who slowly stood, scanning those in attendance. It was a small, select audience, and Terin immediately knew why each individual had been chosen.
"We are the ones she trusts the most."
There was Zelda, of course, and Sojourneus, the aging knight who'd once served her father under the threat of harm to his wife. Sir Metz and Mona Shiri stood nearby, their fingers almost touching. Fay and Terin had been the last to arrive. The room was large, but not nearly as large as the throne room at Castle Hill. Still, it had a vaulted stone ceiling from which hung an enormous brass chandelier brimming with unlit candles. From experience, Terin knew the candles were generally lit each night, their wax dripping into dishes to prevent the hot entrails from splashing the head of some unsuspecting noble. The walls were adorned with vivid tapestries depicting battles, though none as dark and gruesome as those in the castle of Black Guard in Blackstone.
"Lady Zelda," Anise said, "tell them what you told me."
Zelda ran a hand through her dark hair, rubbing at one of her eyes.
"My eldest brother, Helmuth Garrick, liked to play games of strategy."
It was such an unexpected statement that everyone, save Anise and Zelda, shifted from foot to foot, glancing at each other.
"Games?" Sojourneus said,
cocking his grey head to the side.
"Aye," Zelda said. "Games. When he wasn't in the archives studying maps, he would challenge people to Knights of the Kingdom or Conquer. Not other children, adults. I watched him play against my father many times."
Terin had a feeling where this story was going, but he didn't interrupt.
"My father was the undefeated king, but what most people don't know is that his success on the battlefield was not only due to his prowess as a warrior and commander, but because of his skills as a strategist. Even if Helmuth didn't inherit our father's strong legs, he inherited his mind for strategy."
Sojourneus spoke up once more.
"Thus far, his strategy seems fairly straightforward. Assemble a vicious, fearless army and hunt us to the ends of the earth."
"Not fearless," Anise said, raising her eyebrows. "They retreated from Terin." Terin knew she had meant it as a compliment, but the reminder sent a pang of guilt through his chest.
"Fair enough," Jonius said. "But who else but the armored knight can chase away the dogs of hell?"
Zelda said,
"Respectfully, you're missing the point, sir. This story isn't about the Horde. It's about Helmuth."
"Apologies, my lady," Jonius said with a slight bow.
"Please continue." "Helmuth lost games of strategy to my father many times, even when he had been defeating other adults consistently. Most children his age would grow frustrated at losing. My brother, however, wouldn't sulk or throw a tantrum. He would analyze his defeat, mapping out every move he and my father had made and where he'd gone wrong. And then he would try again."
"Did he ever defeat him?" Mona asked.
"Only once," Zelda said. "The day before he disappeared."
Silence fell across the chamber, the last word echoing several times before the sound faded away. Terin finally spoke.
"Your brother is no longer in the north."
It was not a question, but more a request for confirmation.
"I don't believe so," she said.
He destroyed Crimea, laid the most powerful kingdom in the world low, overthrew a line of rulers that had persevered for centuries. He has not come to the Four Kingdoms just to reclaim what should have been rightfully his. No, he has come to conquer. And we are no threat to him,
Terin continued.
We are weak, our armies diminished. We are retreating. So he sent a small portion of his strength to pursue us, to finish us off.
Zelda nodded.
While the true horde marched south. To where?
Jonius asked.
Raider's pass would give him options.
Zelda pursed her lips and scrunched her face, and Terin guessed her response before she gave it.
I don't know. I was never the strategist either my father or Helmuth were. I preferred to hit things until they stopped moving. Like aunt, like niece,
Terin thought, thinking of a niece. Jonius said,
He could have marched east to Feria or west to Night's End.
Or straight south to Faen's or Calip,
Anise said.
Helmuth has proven himself unpredictable.
Terin nodded in agreement.
He will choose the kingdom he thinks he can defeat without significant losses.
In the location that will give him a strategic advantage,
Anise added.
Zelda said, He won't go south. He'll have little information on the current situation in the south. But Blackstone would have been full of streams from the west and the east. He'll know Rhea Loren sent her armies southward. It makes sense,
Terin said.
Which means we can escape to the east.
Gareth Ironclad hasn't replied to my stream,
Anise said.
The stream network is no longer viable, Samet said. We only have a handful of Inkreeds for Feria, and who's to say they have any for Darin? Deliveries have ceased altogether.
I agree,
Anise said.
We have no choice but to knock on the door to the east and hope someone answers.
They'll answer all right,
Jonius said,
with swords to our throats and arrows to our hearts.
Terin couldn't disagree. Long had he fought the Ferian legionnaires. They harbored no love or compassion for the North. Why would they help them now?
Gareth Ironclad is different to his father, his brothers,
Anise said.
Was he not part of the attack through Raider's Pass mere months ago?
Sir Jonius said. Anise conceded the point.
Aye, but he was following his father's commands.
Yes, his father, who we killed. Well, technically it was me,
Terin thought, though the details were unimportant. The knight was right. In the eyes of the East, it was the North that killed their king, their queen, and even the crown prince, Guy Ironclad, who'd been murdered by Bane. No one spoke for a while, chewing on their own thoughts.
We can't stay here, Anise finally said.
Why not?
Sir Jonius said.
Now that we know Helmuth and the main body of the Horde have left the North, we can best protect our people behind the walls of Darin, as we have for centuries. For all we know, the barbarians will leave us alone.
Terin considered it. Darin had always been a stalwart border castle, fighting for every inch. Still, the barbarians they faced were different than the human and Orion foes he had fought. He'd seen the way they moved, the power displayed in every stride, every attack. Yes, they'd retreated when faced with destruction, but he was certain they hadn't given up.
They will come, Terin said.
But can we defend ourselves when they do?
Anise asked.
Commander Metz?
We are prepared for every eventuality, he said neutrally. We will not be defeated for lack of discipline.
I know that, sir. But you didn't answer my question. Will we win?
I don't know, Sir Met said.
And coming from the honest to a fault knight, it was only slightly better than an outright no.
But we can try.
Anise took a deep breath, and Terin could see the way her shoulders sagged slightly under the weight of this decision. She valued her counsellors, but in the end her mind would rule. Then, as quickly as they'd drooped, her shoulders lifted and broadened, the strength of her entire countenance seeming to grow before his very eyes.
For now, we shall defend this castle,
as many others have before us." A collective sigh seemed to draw from the lungs of each person in the room, even Terran's. After their long, harried flight across the northern hill lands, none of them were ready to move again. "But," Anise said, pointing a single finger in the air, "we will also prepare to leave at a moment's notice. The instant the battle turns against us, we will make for the Mournful Mountains."
28. The Eastern Kingdom, Feria. Gareth Ironclad. Gareth's frustration boiled over.
"What do you mean there are no Inkreeds for the north?" he growled.
The streamworker's lips were tight, sheened with silver paint that matched her long hair. Her pink eyes were fearless, staring him down like he was naught but a common street rat trying to steal her satchel. An Orion woman. She looked young, perhaps 17 or 18, but Gareth knew for a fact she was in her 60s and had long served the royal streams.
"I'm sorry, Your Highness, but I was mistaken."
One of the first things Gareth had done upon returning to Feria was to visit the royal streams and inquire about their supply of Inkreeds. This very woman had spoken truly when she'd said they still had a small cache of Inkreeds for Castle Hill, Darin, and Blackstone. Now she was lying, or at least not telling the entire truth. Gareth had the urge to slam his fist into the wall. He breathed slowly. This had to be the work of General Jormundar. The Orion General had agreed to Gareth's plan to help the North too quickly. Gareth should have been suspicious. Instead, he'd let the man's political manoeuvrings get the best of him. The very Inkreeds he needed had either been burned into ash or hidden away somewhere he would never find them.
"I hate this," Gareth said.
Not being a leader or a ruler per se, but having to deal with underhanded dealings and backstabbing. For the first time in his life, he truly appreciated how his father had handled those who served him. But Gareth could play this game too, if he had to. "You forced my hand, General. Now it's time to fall into line."
"Thank you," Gareth said to the streamworker, whose lips bore an undisguised smirk.
"I will return if I require your services." She bowed and turned back to the stream, awaiting the next message that would never come now that the stream network had been shattered by war and fear. Gareth departed the stream and made his way to the inner ring of the multi-ringed castle his family had lived in ever since his forefather, Mortis Ironclad, had made peace with the Orions, directed the construction of Feria, and been declared the King of Ironwood. 4 centuries of strife, happiness, fear, death, and life had passed since then, and as Gareth ordered a horse to be prepared for him, he felt the weight of all that time pressing down upon his shoulders. How had his father done it? Ruled a kingdom split in half by 2 races as different as the sky from the ocean? The answer punched through his mind on the knuckles of his father's heavy fist. With allies. That was how his father had done it. He rode the line between friendship and respect with each and every one of his generals. The problem was, Gareth's own generals weren't on his side. Yes, they'd been willing to ally themselves with the West for a time, but only because it was a joint effort to attack another enemy in the Phoenicians. But now, their hearts will never agree to my plan to help the North, even if their words do. Which meant Gareth needed another ally, one whose voice could not be contained, so loud the generals, including Jormundar, would have no choice but to listen. As soon as his horse, a black destrier with white markings just behind its ears, was prepared, Gareth wasted no time in leaping atop its back, digging in his heels, and charging through the gate from the inner ring. Behind him he heard the stablemen cough, their lungs filled with dust. Gareth's horse swept around the final bend, past legionnaires performing training exercises, who stopped to watch as their king rode as if hunted by a dragon's shadow. He didn't look at them, didn't pause to see which, if any, of the generals were in the main courtyard. Instead, he galloped up to the castle's main gate, flashing a sign to the hidden Orion channelers positioned somewhere atop the wall. "Open the Ordam gate," he thought. Unlike a standard gate that required a wheel to be turned, pulled by strong men or cattle, chains clinking, gears groaning, This gate seemed to peel itself back, parting in the centre like a curtain being drawn to either side. What had been strong iron a moment ago was now liquid ore, channeled by the Orion gatekeepers who had seen his hand signal and obeyed without question. Without another thought, Gareth spurred his horse forward, not looking back to see if the gate had closed behind him. He was energized, life breathed back into him by the drastic measures he was about to take. Previously, his generals had advised him to withhold the information about the Horde from his people.
"You don't want to incite panic,"
General Jormundur himself had said. Grudgingly, Gareth had agreed. After all, there was a time and place for such news, and before he made the situation public, he wanted to have a plan to protect his people, to calm their fears. But now the generals had left him no choice. He would tell his people the truth, and then he would convince them that helping the Northerners would provide an ally they sorely needed, if they were going to survive the dark day that was rolling toward them like a great wave. As he made for the main part of the village, iron-sheathed trees flashed past. An alliance between nature and people, Gareth thought. It was something he'd once heard Gwendolyn Storm say. She told him it was how her father had described the creation of Feria. At the time, he'd made light of it. Now it felt like providence, for everywhere he looked was the evidence. Houses channeled from iron grew amongst the trees, joining with them, sharing a wall or sprouting metallic branches from their roofs. A true alliance, Gareth thought. That's what we need with the North. If both parties were not in it with their hearts, it would fail. The Horde would sweep across them, devastating all. That can't happen. I won't let it. Gareth's thoughts faded as he heard a noise in the distance, loud enough to rise above the furious clop of his horse's hooves. He cocked his head, listening, trying to make sense of the dull roar. He slowed his steed, bringing it to a trot as they mounted a small rise, beyond which was the village. "Whoa," he said, drawing back on his reins until his horse stopped completely. He gawked at the scene unfolding before him. Villagers lined the streets, human and Orion and everything in between. They were stacked hundreds thick, standing shoulder to shoulder and front to back, all staring at something in the centre of the main town square. Not something, Gareth realized. Someone. Every so often, they would roar in agreement or approval, a collective cheer so loud he'd heard it from a distance. Gareth dismounted, frowning, trying to remember whether he'd forgotten about some obscure Orion holiday. He shook his head, nothing coming to mind. He strode forward, but none noticed his approach. As he reached the rear of the throng, the form that drew their attention came into focus. General Jormundur. The tall, strong military commander stood atop a platform that had been the pedestal for an iron statue of Gareth's own ancestor for as long as he could remember. Mortis Ironclad stood a full 12 feet tall, one hand raised in defiance to his enemies, holding not a sword, but, of all things, an axe. It was said that before he'd come to Ironwood he was a mere woodsman, a woodcutter. The axe had become a symbol of swords, of how they would chop down not trees, but their enemies. General Jormundur had chosen his spot well, using that famous symbol as the backdrop as he riled up Gareth's own people.
"I have seen the Horde with my very own eyes,"
Jormundur shouted. Of course, he didn't mention it was an image projected into his mind.
"They are a force the likes of which the Four Kingdoms has never faced, a scourge that would seek to wipe us from the very face of the earth. But will we let them?"
A resounding "No!" thundered through the crowd.
"Will our ancient alliance of humans and Orions be shattered by barbarians from across the ocean? No!"
Gareth gritted his teeth, for the general's words were not far from the same he would have spoken, that he had planned to speak, if given the chance. But, once again, he'd been outfoxed by the experienced Orion man. He started to shove through the crowd, but the general's next words stopped him short.
"Will the Iron People of the East be defeated in Ironwood, in the city of Feria, which has long been a stronghold unbroken by lance or sword, or even the dragonfire of our enemies? No, no, no!"
"Damn it,"
Gareth thought. After this speech, no one would want their legionnaires to leave the safety of Ironwood. Gareth knew he could order his armies, or a portion thereof, to ride northward, but it would come at a grave price, the respect and trust of his own people. If he was going to help the northerners, he would need to come up with another way, for he was not willing to ignore the opinions of the Faerians. He turned and marched back the way he'd come, no one having noticed he was ever there. 29. The Western Kingdom, Night's End. Ennis Loren. Ennis awoke with a shudder, his entire body convulsing. His eyes fluttered wildly, unable to focus on anything. Pain coursed through him, sharp and fast, and he rolled over into the fetal position. The agony passed suddenly, leaving him feeling empty, hollowed out. His stomach heaved, and his mouth exploded open as he vomited a thick stream of bitterness.
Where? Who? What?
His mind struggled to clamp down on the world around him, which looked faded and old. Grey clouds plumed overhead, but they were too close, and they smelled like smoke, he realized, trying to sit up, but crashing back down as his lungs filled with the noxious air. He coughed, hacking up black phlegm that he spat into the puddle of vomit. Images rushed back to him. They seemed like distant memories, or perhaps the events from a stranger's life. Cy Loren, with his haughty expression, casting his own brother from the city. The sad eyes of Wheaton, even as he turned his back on his own kin. A man? That's me, Ennis thought, stumbling through the forest, his eyes wide with fear. Pale, loping forms suddenly all around him, and a man, his legs bound with yew and iron. And then the pain, so immense he had blacked out.
Oh, Roth, Ennis thought. Oh, Roth, I must warn them. I must tell them the enemy is here, at their very doorstep.
Instead of sitting up, Ennis crawled forward, searching for the path through the trees.
Wait, wait.
There were no trees, and his hand scraped not against dirt and leaf and twig, but across cobblestones. Dark water streamed between the gaps in the stones, tiny rivulets that changed course at each intersection, drawing squares along the street.
The street? Ennis thought. I'm not in the forest anymore. I'm in Night's End. But how?
His gaze caught something that draped from him, slithering like a snake across the stonework. Links, connected to each other. A chain. He groped with one hand at his neck, feeling the hard truth. A band of iron clasped around his throat like one of the choker necklaces favored by some Phoenician women. Except this one was connected to a chain, which drew a path through the blood, Ennis thought. For the dark water wasn't water at all, but rivers of blood coursing down the street. He followed the path of the long chain, but it disappeared into the smoke. Screams tore through the fog, but none of them lasted, cut off mid-shriek.
People,
Ennis thought, his chest filling with dread.
My people.
Panicking, he tried to back away, the chain clanking after him, slowly being coated with blood. He gagged as the chain pulled tight and he heaved forward, barely catching his fall with his hands before he crashed face first onto the hard stones. Footfalls surrounded by screams echoed through Ennis's ears. He stared in the direction of the chain, watching as dark boots emerged from the smoke, followed by legs bound with yew and iron. Fear slithered through him, but he clamped his teeth down hard, grinding them together, fighting against the images that tried to break through his mental defences. Broken bodies, rivers of blood, gnashing teeth and flashing claws. Smoke, so much smoke.
You are strong-willed,
a rumbling voice said, and Ennis managed to crane his head to look at the man standing before him, the leader of the Horde. Of all things, a mere man. His brow, eyes, and the corner of his lips were lined with deep wrinkles that spoke of a hard life. Something shone darkly on his chest, which was bare. Three black spots, illuminated by edges of bright white light.
Not spots,
Ennis realized.
Drops. Blood. He's fate-marked. Roth, help us all.